You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we are sharing our tips and tricks for planning CMS builds, including Expression Engine, Craft, and Statamic. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by Backup Pro. Backup Pro is the comprehensive backup solution for Expression Engine. With Backup Pro, you can rest easy knowing your site's protected and available when disaster strikes and you need to recover ASAP. Redundancy, automated oversight, granular customization, and much more are all baked in. Available at Mithra62.com.
So this is our first podcast in a long time with just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into our topic, what's been going on with you, Leah?
I took a whirlwind trip to Vancouver this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I've lived in Seattle for about a year and a half now already.
Oh my God.
I know, time flies. And even though there's certain cities and road trips to be had, Rob and I haven't really gone on them.
Mm.
And so the whirlwind trip really literally happened in like, hey, why haven't we gone to Vancouver yet? I don't know. What are we doing this weekend? Let's just go.
That's so cool.
Yeah, no, it was great, especially because you know how I'm a huge foodie.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle's a big foodie town. But for some reason, Japanese food and Chinese food isn't as great as, say, Vancouver is. I mean, there's a huge Asian population in Vancouver. So the first thing we did was go to an izakaya and eat all the Japanese food we could have. So
nice.
That was fun. Yeah.
Good. So was that a long drive?
No. See, that was the thing. The longest part of it was customs. Literally 50 minutes in the car. Just lining up, which was annoying. But the actual journey, like if there was no customs, it would have been 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours to get from point to point. But because of customs, there was, you know, essentially an extra hour just sitting around waiting. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, that's a pretty short like drive. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll probably go back a few more times then.
Yeah. No, it was really funny because it's so close by, it's like, oh, I'm back in Canada again. Like Canada, US. And then just seeing how my cell phone switched from AT&T while I was waiting in line at customs, like literally at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it was, nope, now there's data charges if you start using. And I'm like, oh, there was literally like a foot difference before that switched on and off. And I was just thinking, how do they know?
The magic of GPS.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, that sounds nice. Yeah, I had a very low-key weekend doing a whole lot of nothing. I'm still kind of recovering from a cold that I picked up when you and I were in New Orleans for CSS DevConf. I can't seem to shake it. And I guess it's just maybe a combination of the change of season plus, you know, being around a whole bunch of germs.
Yeah, I know. Conference is always, it's always so much fun, but then there's consequences.
Yeah. Well, and I can't even 100% guarantee that it was from the conference. Every time I get on a plane, I feel like I get
right.
sick. That always makes me paranoid being on a plane.
Like, you know, isolated tube of germs.
Ugh, God, that's totally what it is. Ugh, I really hate flying. All right, so let's get to today's episode. I wanted to start with a listener question.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're going to be talking about EE, Craft, and Statamic today, I wanted to discuss choosing the right tool because listener Curtis Blackwell sent us a tweet and he wanted to find out when is each the right tool for a project. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, for me, it's kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. There's just so many things to consider, and sometimes one CMS is better than the other for a particular scope. So for me, I feel like the first thing to consider is understanding the scale of the current site as well as how they want it to scale in the future. So where the site is currently may not be where it is later on, or maybe it will be. And that really, really, I think, establishes which CMS you might want to think about. And then quickly after that, does it need a database or not? So I feel like, is it going to be sticking around for a while? Will this data need to be exported very easily or have some really crazy dynamic needs and logins for some reason? And I want to mention that sometimes that might seem complex, but it might not actually be. So, for example, like when we had that episode on Statamic and e-commerce, I learned that you don't necessarily need a database for that, you know, because I feel like when somebody thinks, oh, e-commerce site, let's just jump straight into Expression Engine because, you know, it's got robust third-party tools and testing and it's a huge CMS. But that might be overkill if all a client wants is to sell like a few t-shirts and mugs, right? And the rest of the site is brochureware. So if, you know, you install Expression Engine, it's just, well, why do you need all the other bells and whistles it has if that's all that client wants to do? So Statamic makes more sense. But thinking about that scale part and like what's happening in the future, let's say that client, that same mug selling client, wants to have membership tied to purchases and he wants a way to export that data easily so he can do his own statistic thing in his own way. And then he also wants to sell more products in the future and have dynamic data, history of that kind of stuff for their memberships based on behavior or whatever. Well, I feel like in that case, a database makes more sense. So then at that point, we'd have to look at Craft or EE. And then after that, I think about, well, what's the community behind each tool?
Absolutely,
because when I'm thinking about scale as well, you know, I can't discount how battle-tested certain things could be and how good the third-party add-on ecosystem is. So sometimes for me, if there's a make-or-break functionality that one CMS has over the other, even if the rest of the features match, I'll most likely choose a software that has that make or break functionality. Even if I like the user experience of another one, that functionality goes first and foremost because I'm trying to make sure that the client, their needs and their goals for the future is dealt with.
Yeah, I think scale is a huge part, knowing what the client needs in advance. In fact, I feel like that's one of the reasons why we spend so much time, not just in the discovery process once we sign a client, but even before we've engaged with the client, when we're dealing with the prospect, trying to get a sense of the scope of their project beyond the bullet list that they have in their RFP. But for me, I also have to admit that when I'm thinking about the right CMS for the project, it's a combination of those client needs, but also what I know how to use. I've been using Expression Engine for, I can't do math in my head, but a while. And I've only been using Statamic for a year. You do all of our Craft builds, so I really just know Craft from the tutorials I've done and using it as a content author, but I've never built in Craft. And so I think about what I know how to use. So, for example, if it's a simple brochureware type site, like I can totally do that in EE. I feel like I can do anything in EE. But Expression Engine is way too much for that. And I kind of like that right now, you know, years after I've been using Expression Engine, I have an option. Before, I'd use EE, but I would feel like, wow, this was a whole lot more than this client needs. And so I like that we have options. And maybe even Craft might be too much for a brochureware type site. So I think of Statamic. I can build simple sites like that. But then looking at the project closer, they need brochureware now, but expect more functionality later. And so I start thinking about what will support the site's growth over time. Statamic could certainly be a good fit, but like you were describing, like what if that brochureware site might need to expand and include something like membership? Or even if it's a brochureware site, but it's coming from another platform that's database driven and they want to import that data, I have no idea how I would do that in Statamic because it's all flat files. Like there may be a way to do it, but I don't know how to do it. And so for me to pick Statamic wouldn't make sense. In a year, if I figure that out, then Statamic might be okay for that. And so it's a combination of what the project needs, what it needs now and in the future, that scale you were talking about, but also what I can proficiently build in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I think we can't underestimate the wealth of knowledge we have with one over the other because, you know, especially as, you know, running a business and stuff, we time is money, right? And if it's taking way too much time and we know we can build it confidently with another system, then we'll build it with that system that we're confident in, especially if there's a time crunch or whatever. I feel like, you know, it makes sense to invest in time learning other CMSs so we have a more holistic approach and understanding over the needs for our clients' projects. But I feel like at least in our experience, we chose particular projects that gave us more flexibility mm-hmm. in order to actually sit down and learn and understand the system. But if there was a time crunch, I feel like both of you and I would be like Expression yeah, Engine.
We
you know?
It. We're fast with it.
Yeah.
We know the add-ons that we trust. We know the community that brings up that community point even more so.
Right.
I mean, I can honestly say that I enjoy working with Statomic, but I'm not as familiar with what some of the add-ons are because I haven't sort of moved into that yet. I've been just building with Core. So if I needed more, I would really want to experiment a little bit first.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I love developing for mm-hmm. Craft. And to me, after our second site with Craft, it was just so easy for me. But currently, I mean, it's a young mm-hmm. system. So there were a couple of RFPs that we were looking at, and there's that make or break functionality. Mm-hmm. It's like that one thing that it couldn't do, or it just started to do, so my confidence in it isn't mm-hmm. as high. So then it's like, okay, we'll have to choose Expression Engine perhaps for that instead.
Yeah.
Right? So that's where we're coming from. And speaking of Expression Engine, since we both started with EE, let's talk about how we both started, how we started planning for EE builds. So in the beginning, when you were first working with EE, did you do any planning at all?
Nothing. Zip, zero, zilch. And in fact, I don't even think I thought that planning would be necessary. When I started with Expression Engine, I had no background in content management systems. I'd never right. even worked with WordPress or, I don't know, whatever was out there at the time. I didn't. I just did front-end development. And any content management systems were custom that my employer had built in-house. And so right. planning, I figured I had to learn it. And so I built as I went along, which I wonder if that's the natural sort of thing. I mean, how do you plan for a tool that you've never used before?
Yeah, that's totally mm-hmm. true. I mean, for me, back in the day, if talking to yourself counts as planning, then I did some planning, but I never actually wrote anything down. And I think that's kind of a curse of anyone that's been self-employed. Mm. You know, like, why would you write it down? Because it's in my brain, I know, and I don't need to share it with anyone. But I didn't have a set way or order of doing things anyway, so I just knew what needed to be mm-hmm. done. And so it was definitely more on the fly. And similar to you, I have used like different systems before Expression Engine. Actually, part of the reason why I went to Expression Engine was back during that controversial time of movable type. Mm-hmm. They had some sort of, you know, they started charging, God forbid. And then there were so many restrictions or whatever. And at the time, Alice Lab was like, well, if you don't like movable type, why don't you try Expression Engine? So it's like, all right, maybe I should. And the rest is history, as they say.
So what does planning involve for you now that you've got many years of Expression Engine development under your belt?
You know, for me, to be honest, the turning point was EECI
yes.
2010.
Yes.
And it was Levi mm-hmm. Graham. Hi, Levi, if you're listening. And he was explaining how his team documents mm-hmm. their work. So I basically started using his ideas and kind of went from there. And back then, I think due to how I build and things like that, it was mostly an idea to send to clients as a deliverable. Because back then, it was one of those things where I didn't bill monthly or weekly or however like we bill these days. And it was all by deliverable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like you get the deposit. I always had a deposit, which was good. But then sometimes there's this like long point where there's nothing. And then so I used Levi's as a way to get paid at some point in the middle. So they saw that, you know, I was planning and things mm-hmm. like that. And I think in terms of planning back then and then how I do now, I think with how we deal with proposals now, I think about add-ons way sooner than I used mm-hmm. to, trying to figure out what we can get away with natively and listing out any potential add-ons. And then after that, I think we also start to anticipate potential subcontractors at this mm-hmm. point, you know, just to anticipate any customization needs for those add-ons mm-hmm. I mentioned. So I know since working with you, I basically have become way more detailed in documenting and moreover anticipating anything that could possibly go wrong.
It's contagious.
So from then, from nothing, no planning, and now, what does it involve for you?
Yeah, I think my earliest planning was add-ons, thinking like what add-ons I might want to bring into it. Right. Today, and very much inspired by Levi's presentation and the document that he shared, which we'll link to in our show notes, I have an extremely detailed Google Doc that has all of the planning in it. It's channels, it's custom fields, it's templates. And like, you know, within each of those, like in the channels, it's the name, it's the short name, the field group, category, every single thing I plan out in advance. And I find that it's that sort of detailed planning document, the very narrow aspect of it, it really helps me in particular establish my naming conventions really early on.
Right.
Because in the past, I'd get into building and I'd be naming one way. And then the next day when I went back to the system, I'd build a new channel with some fields and realize, oh, a better name would work for what I had done the day before. And so I'd go back and I'd update that stuff. And I mean, I was just wasting time trying to name things right.
Yeah.
So planning it in advance helps me kind of avoid that OCD tendency that I have about naming conventions.
Man, like if you looked at some of my older EE implementations, there was no naming conventions because there was no planning. It was just, okay, you know, especially when you're transitioning from that like a blog type CMS mindset, a body is just body. That's the short name. There's no other description associating it with a channel. There was no description. What does body even mean? Is this a testimonial? Is this a, you know, what an article? I just put body because everyone used body back in the blogging days.
And this makes me sort of think about a listener question that we got from Alex Armstrong. His was specific about Statamic, but part of his question was that how does one structure content in Statamic so it's less page-oriented and more content strategic? And I don't really want to get into Statamic just yet because we're talking about EE, but I think his point about being content specific, content strategic versus page oriented, I think that comes into play in the planning. And it has to do less with the CMS and more with the content planning. Doing the discovery with the client, we have a very thorough kickoff process that you and I follow, sending the client a very detailed survey of information that we need to get about their content. We talk to them about workflow. We talk to them about who the different types of members might be, like if they have an editorial workflow where someone has to approve things. So in the planning, it's not just the CMS and what the channel names would be and what the template should be and all that other stuff. It's also what is the content? Like you have to know that in advance. There's just no way around it unless you want to spend a whole lot of wasted time and money. And money that you're probably going to have to suck up if you did a flat rate estimate on the project in your proposal.
No, I totally agree. Absolutely.
And I think this is something that for our listeners, if you check out the link to the Levi's presentation in the show notes, that's one of the first things he details that Nuism does in their planning is creating, it's not quite a site map, but it really does reflect that sort of concept of what kind of content's involved. It's a news item. What does that news item contain? You know, everything from, you know, does it have an author? Does it have a date? Does it have like a lead paragraph? Will there be an archive? Will there be categories associated with those news items? If there's an archive, like how will the archive be structured? By date, by category? So knowing in advance what kind of content you're dealing with, that should be, in my opinion, before you even get into the CMS planning.
I agree. And I also want to point out not just big content, because I think that's part of the issue with his question is like, well, how do I move from page, which I feel like is quote unquote big, like
the big
the big picture content, versus like small stuff. Like I know with Expression Engine for us, we think about what can be put in low variables. What's the small content? What can we pull out that's going to be repeated so we have a dry approach to development? I'm not familiar with Statamic to see if there's enough ways we can just pull out variables and things like that. So first thing is like, what is the big content, like the overall picture? And then what's the small pieces that's repeatable? I think is definitely something to consider. How can we approach this with a DIY dry mindset?
Absolutely. You know, another thing I think comes into play in planning, and again, this is not as much about the CMS as it is about the site as a whole, is if you're dealing with a site that you're either redesigning or upgrading, but you know something existed before on their domain, you need to take a look at the URLs on their old domain and start listing them out so you have a reference point for what was there originally. And then as you're building, what the new URLs might be so that you can do your URL redirects once the new site goes live.
Right.
That was something I had never done before, but I got involved in a project with a couple other agencies, and I was doing the EE build. They were doing the design in the front end. And they introduced this idea of documenting what the existing URLs on the site would be and what we anticipated they would be down the line. So we had a simple document to reference early on that the client would also approve. Once we figured out what our template structure would be, we would know what the URLs would be, and we would make sure that the client was okay with that, which is a big deal if the client also has a lot of SEO campaigns running. So I think that's another part of planning that I certainly never thought of until a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. And I have a very similar story, too. There's a client where they actually didn't even have a CMS. Everything was just static PHP files, and there was no content strategy. It was like some links had a folder, some links didn't, some had who knows what that name was. And having that document where it listed all their original like URLs and where it would map out in Expression Engine or something like that, it allowed you to see patterns, especially when you have to make a HT access redirect rule of some sort. If you start listing it out, then you'll be able to see, okay, I need to make sure that the .php is removed. We're going to keep the name of this, and then we need to add this folder in front of it. And sometimes just kind of even saying it, I need to have this, then you just try to figure out how to do the regex. That's, to me, is the confusing part. But like, I know what the next step is. And actually, Levi, speaking of which, helped me with this particular project for free. I was just like confused on Twitter. And he's like, I know what you're doing. So thanks again, Levi, for the planning help.
And I think you alluded to this earlier. And again, it was something that Levi emphasized in his presentation, is that all of these things that you're doing with planning, whether it's the content strategy, the URL, what is it, documentation and mapping to new URLs, and then the CMS, all of those can be paid deliverables. Like you can do them and you could get paid for them. As opposed to waiting for, or even not just get paid for it, just making sure the client knows that you're active in the project.
Yeah. Because I don't think the client actually understands the document.
Yeah.
They barely don't. But half the time with client relationships is just assuring them that everything's all right.
Absolutely. You know? So let's shift to craft and talk about what kind of planning you're doing for craft builds. And I'm particularly interested in knowing if the lessons you've learned over time with EE, did they help or hinder you when you started working with craft?
Like when you started with EE, I didn't quite understand the system like with craft. And so I still had to shift the mindsets on how to approach the site build. So for example, in craft, the fact that templates naturally have a folder structure, I mean, it's completely separate from the control panel and it's rendered through files and folder structure and not in the CP. So that was a big part in trying to figure out how to make the site. And I was also simultaneously trying to learn Twig. So with my first craft site, much like EE, I didn't really plan as much as just trying to make things work. You know, that was like my first priority. Does this even work? And Majingo's tutorials were the starting point of the plan. So just like I did, even like, you know, when I first started learning HTML and CSS, I just literally tried to replicate the practice site that Majingo created and then bolted the other site using that structure. So I didn't write anything down at that time because I was just mostly concerned in figuring out how the entire thing worked. So at that time, I don't think it really made sense to have a planning document because I wouldn't even know where to begin to plan. So
you did think about the content planning. So you still had planning, but it wasn't necessarily specific to craft.
Yeah. So like I tried to figure out what could I, you know, just because I said everything's templates, it's not page related. Mm-hmm. So I had to think about little things like modules, as in underscore footer.html kind of thing. And it wouldn't be in low variables, but it would be just its own file. Just the footer is its own file versus like, okay, how do I have like a master layout for all the inside pages. So that's also something very different for craft, is just figuring out how to have its own templates render, not like template by template. It's just like you can have like your master templates for a particular layout, and you can have your own things related to just that particular layout, and it's regardless of where it is in the structure of the site. So you could have a page master.html and you could just embed that into like the index.html of about folder. I know for those that don't understand craft, this might sound like really, really weird, but yeah, that was kind of like my thinking process when I was trying to figure out like, okay, what are the layouts going to be separate from the structure, and what's the structure going to be as well? It was like, it's very similar actually in my thinking when I first started playing around with EE's
template partials.
Yeah, like the template partials as well as, gosh, Mark Croxton's add-on.
Oh, Stash?
Yes, Stash. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot similar in naturally, natively, out of the box, DRY Stash. You know, like you have your master layouts, you have your embeds, you have your inputs and stuff like that. And I think the way the term embeds is different from expression engine embeds too. So like having to figure all of that even out, just like, okay, what's the translation in my mind, was one of the things that I was trying to even deal with when I was starting to work with craft.
So it sounds like there were some things that, not that it hindered you in craft, but you had to almost disassociate from your associations with Expression Engine. On the flip side of that, was there anything that you brought from your years of experience building CMSs and EE that actually helped you build a good CMS in craft? I mean, a good project in craft.
Right after I finished the first craft site, like I kind of figured out how it more or less works. But even thinking about the years of planning, you know, Expression Engine sites and just CMS sites, just understanding the content first and foremost was the biggest thing. Like I mentioned with even the Statamix site question, what's the big picture and what's the small content? Because I was really trying to figure out like, what can I, you know, how much can I pull out of this that can be repeated over and over and over again was the biggest thing. So when I started the second craft site that we made, and because it made a lot more sense to me, I did start using our planning doc.
The EE planning doc that we had?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it was like I started a planning doc based off of that EE planning doc. However, but unlike EE, I didn't think about add-ons until much later. Because it's such a young system, what add-ons? You know what I mean? I mean, there is a ton. There's a ton of craft add-ons, but it wasn't the first thing that I thought of. I thought about, and this is part of the reason why I really like craft, is, you know, I thought about the content way, way sooner because of the way craft handles content. So, for example, craft has something called section types. Those section types include structures, singles, and channels. And this is like the big picture content that I'm thinking about, the structure, singles, and channels. So I had to figure out whether that content had to fit in one versus the other. And then there's even more granularity within those particular section types, and those are called entry types. So what was interesting was when I was building that next craft site, it was just before entry types was introduced. So I actually had to completely change my planning document midway. It was really interesting just to see how my mindset was shifting more towards content first versus functionality first.
Like add-ons.
Yeah, because I feel like with the expression engine planning, I think about, will this work functionally? While with content, with craft, was I kind of assumed that everything is already possible. So like, or I already understood that this particular functionality already exists. So even though I say, okay, it doesn't have as many add-ons, that's because it doesn't need as many add-ons, I guess, depending on the functionality that you need. So a lot of things I was thinking about was content first.
So now that you have this craft planning document that you were, that was inspired by our EE planning document, what's the difference between the two? And what's similar?
Okay. So let's talk about the differences first. What's definitely more different from the EE planning document is how much more detailed the custom field documentation is. And that's due to how craft handles fields. So fields in craft is kind of like, it can belong to anything. What I mean by that is it doesn't have to belong to a channel. It can belong to some other it's like its own thing floating around and you just associate mm-hmm. it with wherever you want to go. So it can be part of multiple groupings. So in the planning document, I had to outline which were shared fields and which were exclusive to that particular layout. So there's also layout groups for fields, and that's not necessarily a field group. So that's related to how the layout of the fields will be based on chattel single or structure mm-hmm. that it's associated with, or the entry type it's associated with. And then Craft also has a special field called the matrix field. And matrix field can have other fields inside it. So with the planning document for Craft, I had to break down all the possible subfields that's related to that matrix field. What was interesting was when I was planning all of this, it was interesting how I realized that I misunderstood some Craft functionality. Oh. So the planning document actually helped me really understand Craft as well. You know, again, especially because I was basing the Craft documentation on our EE documentation. Sometimes you kind of bolt functionality from one to the other. And then when I actually tried to implement it as I had planned it due to that, I realized actually that makes no mm-hmm. sense. It actually doesn't make sense based on the functionality. Like, one of the major things I definitely changed was because how Craft fields are handled and it can belong to anything, I was able to remove a lot of redundancy. Mm. Like in EE, you might need to have all those multiple fields, but one particular field can apply to so many different places mm-hmm. that in my planning document, I had to delete a lot of fields that I didn't need.
Right.
And I just didn't implement because, okay, that one field can apply to three different entry types or whatever. And I think the simplest one, I think, for example, is meta tag description stuff. You know, you could have that associated with a blog post entry type as well as like a master field because it's the same field and contains same information. It's just that one is going to be customized to a blog post and one is the global. I didn't need to have global underscore meta tag versus blog underscore meta tag. Just have meta tag, which could apply to both.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that I love about, well, there are a number of things I like about our planning documents. And one is that I find it saves a lot of time because everything in your head, you're putting on paper and looking at it before you start building and then discover halfway through the build, oh, that's actually not the right way to do this. I need to undo the build instead of just correcting your planning document. Because I feel like in one of the last projects we did in EE, I had built all the planning document out. I had listed all of the channels, the categories, all of the different fields and the field types they would be. And then I had you go through it and you caught a few things that in my head made sense, but you looked at it and were like, oh, no, we actually want to do it this way. So we caught a lot of stuff before I started building anything and then had to waste the time undoing. The undoing was in this paper document that's a whole lot easier to change. And not to mention make comments on. So we also have like a history of comments and the discussion related to it then becomes like ongoing documentation that you may not be able to have when you've undone a channel and changed the custom fields. Like there's no like revision history for that. That's in the database, you know, that's not versioned.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just pointed out the biggest benefit for having planning documents in the first place, the ability to share mm-hmm. it within your team. So you can just have another pair of eyes who say, well, this doesn't make sense mm-hmm. to me, or, you know, this would be another efficient way to do it, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Like, so you're benefiting from a larger mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so amazed that it took me as long as it did to actually start becoming really detailed in the planning. Because the first time I did it, I swear I built the CMS. Like once the planning was done, I built the CMS in like 3 hours. Like there had to be a lot more stuff done, but the core channels, the core fields, like I just banged all that out super, super, super fast. Because I had this document that told me what the names were. It told me whether it was required, you know, how many characters I was going to allow, whether it was a rich text editor field or a text area. You know, all of that stuff was already figured out. I wasn't thinking about it when I was building.
Yeah, you weren't pausing, mm-hmm. consider it, et cetera. It's like just execute. And, you know, I have to say that craft site, that second craft site I built in 2 days, the majority of it. And the rest of the week was just, you know, tweaking, fixing, etc. But because I had that planning document, it was all like relatively straightforward. It was just like, okay, just bang it out. So we've been talking about craft and EE for a bit. Let's circle back to static. Yeah. How do you start planning static?
Well, I think it's the same story that we've both talked about. When I was learning static, I didn't really plan. And I have to admit, part of this is my mentality about static. I thought of it as a quote-unquote small CMS that didn't need planning, which is sort of ignorant because it's not a small CMS and planning is always useful. But after building two sites with it, it became really clear that planning is important because once again, I got caught up in my naming conventions issue. I was naming stuff and setting it up in my flat files and then I'd think about it and the next day I'd change it and I was going back and forth and it was absolutely ridiculous. And I think it does need the same sort of meticulous approach to planning and management. Maybe even more so if you are coming from a CMS experience where you're sort of building in the control panel, because you're building in flat files that are somewhat abstracted from the control panel experience.
Right.
And so knowing what you're going to call your fields and what types of fields you're going to use is really critical. And this is even true if you're using a theme. We haven't talked about themes yet because you and I, we don't do a lot of theme work. Most everything we do is custom, but we are doing a theme-based static build right now because it was the perfect solution for a particular client. But the theme, it has some of what the client needs, but contains a whole lot more of what is really necessary. And part of what I think is important in building a nice CMS is creating a good user experience. And part of that is getting rid of what isn't needed or useful, not just telling the client, ignore that field. Getting rid of it entirely.
Yeah.
And this actually requires a lot of planning because if you didn't build the theme and you go to customize a theme, you can inadvertently delete stuff that you actually need or that there are dependencies built on. Although static, because it relies on flat files, this scenario is kind of nice that static doesn't need a database because everything I'm doing is being managed in version control. And so if I did delete something from the theme that I actually needed, I can roll back pretty easily. Whereas if I deleted, let's say, a channel and expression engine.
Goodbye.
If I catch it soon enough, I can re-import the database. But if I hadn't exported the database to start with, it's just a mess.
Exactly.
It's easy to roll back if you're using version control. But even if you aren't using version control because it's flat file based, I can reference those original files from the theme and do a simple copy and paste. It's not super efficient, but I think it's more so than with a database. But I think planning is essential if you're going to touch a CMS of any kind.
Period.
Is really what it comes down to. And you're only going to get to that mentality if you don't do it. You know, like if you don't do it and you mess up and you realize how much time you're wasting and you're starting to realize that I'm losing money on this, then all of a sudden you start to realize the value of planning.
For sure, because it's so much easier to edit a document than to undo actual work. Yeah. So let's go back to our listener Alex Armstrong's question. Mm-hmm. Let's dive a little bit deeper. So Alex was talking about structuring content in static, so it's less page oriented and more content strategic. But he also pointed out something interesting. There's a new replicator field. Mm. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I haven't actually used it yet, so I can't talk about it from actual experience, but I did take a look at the documentation, which I'll link to in the show notes. For me, I'll draw a comparison to something I'm already familiar with. It reminds me of the Matrix add-on for EE, where you defined a number of different fields and you kind of put each one in a column and they're grouped. And then you give the content author the ability to create another row of this group of fields. So static has a field type called a grid, which is basically this a set of fields together in a grid, columns for lack of a better word. And replicator just takes that and lets you say, well, I want another row of those fields, or I want another block of those fields that the author can enter. And in the documentation, it gives a good example, a good good use case of this with like images. So let's say you have an entry that has a slideshow in it and that requires right. multiple images. Each image might have a caption and it may also have a link that you want the slideshow to link through to direct the person to. And so right. you create a replicator set that has a field for the actual image, a field for the caption, a field for the link. And then you give the user the ability to add as many of those chunks of content, the image, link, and caption, as they want, rather than just saying, oh, you can do three. And so you set up three blocks right. of those content. What looks really cool about Replicator is that it's not just a matter of you can create another block of that content. You can also reorder all of those and not just the individual like images, like reorder one above the other,
right.
but the whole block can be reordered
right.
in the control panel so that you can create a document flow or a content entry workflow that might be more friendly for your content authors. So it can create a slightly better user experience depending on what your needs are.
Oh, that sounds very similar to Crafts Matrix mm. as well. Because I know for our site, we use Crafts CMS in our portfolio section and to be able to reorder specific fields as well as entire blocks mm-hmm. makes it really easy to manage.
I think one of the great things that's nice about these new CMSs that are giving us more options is that they're taking some of the knowledge that, you know, you've learned over years using, you know, maybe another CMS and building great user experiences and building them into the core of something, you know, where you're not having to turn to an add-on. The user experience is really embraced from the beginning, you know, user right. being not you and me who are building it, but the client we're going to hand this right. off to. We're given a lot more tools to make that user experience the best one we can give our clients.
And what's interesting is how there's so many similar functionalities, mm-hmm. but what's also interesting is how different they implement mm-hmm. the similar functionalities. Mm-hmm. So when you're considering a CMS, part of your consideration could be what seems to make sense for the mindset of your client.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
In terms of entering content, because some people will say, well, you know, EE can do the same thing, or Craft can do the same thing, or Statamit can do the same thing. Well, they might do the quote, same thing, but different enough that that could be a differentiating factor or a factor to decide whether that CMS makes the most sense to your mm-hmm. client. Because, you know, sometimes we do have those clients that are very technologically scared yeah. and hesitant, and that does affect the decision making. For example, you know, with Expression Engine, sometimes there's that structure add-on. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I'm not a huge fan because I think it subverts too mm-hmm. much of Expression Engine functionality, but it is so great for clients who just want to see a tree structure mm-hmm. and being able to drag and drop and all that fun stuff. And that might be a reason why I choose that particular implementation.
I don't want to get on a rant about structure, but I love the tree aspect. And that's one of the things yeah. I like about Craft, because you get that natively, but structure, you get that and then you kind of get some issues sometimes depending on what your needs
yeah,
are.
Yeah.
So, you know, another thing I want to talk about is just, I hope what our listeners are getting from this is that if you've worked with any kind of CMS, you have skills that you could apply to any tool, whatever it is.
Right.
Like, yes, you should absolutely get familiar and experiment and see what's possible. But if you understand how to structure a workflow for your content authors, you can apply that knowledge to EE, Statamit, Craft, whatever it is you want to use, because they're just tools. They're tools that take the stuff right. you have in your head and make it reality.
Yeah, agreed. And I just want to circle back over the user experience and choosing the particular functionality, and maybe one user experience is better than the other, even if there's overlapping features. Thinking about, again, what is the scope of the site now and what is the scope of the site in the future? And here's something to consider. If that functionality that you want is native, if it's native to that CMS, that is a major plus.
Yeah.
Because, for example, with Craft and even Statamic, a lot of those things are, it's a first party, it's dealt with by the original developers of their CMSs. That means as the CMS grows, that functionality is going to grow with it and will continue to work as planned because it's part of their functionality to test that because it's native. If it is an add-on, who knows? Who knows whether that add-on will work in the future?
To reference our last episode with Sean Maida, where we talked about upgrades, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the biggest pain points I experience with our Expression Engine upgrades are getting add-ons and figuring out, first of all, if they're supported by the latest version, and then if they're not, making the decision on what you do at that point. If it's not an add-on and it's just part of the core system, that eliminates that concern.
Yep.
It eliminates
absolutely
the freaking audit that you spend hours on trying to figure out, you know, if the add-ons are ready.
That's just the reality. Mm-hmm. That is also a differentiating factor and definitely something to consider when you're choosing a CMS. Mm-hmm. Whether you can say, yeah, well, all of them all look the same, have the same functionality, but do they? What's native? What's not? That's definitely something to consider.
Let's return to the discussion of planning. When you do your planning, is it just at the beginning or do you plan throughout a build? Like, is there any planning after launch even?
I would have to say with that particular craft one, I did try to do it in the beginning, but weird stuff came up during actual implementation that made me understand that what I had planned for didn't make any sense. So I had to change the planning document mid-build. In regards to that, I feel planning starts at the beginning for sure before you even touch the CMS, but don't be so hardcore that you don't change the planning document if the scope or whatever changes.
So like your planning document becomes documentation.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
Regardless of CMS, what have been some of the hardest lessons you've learned along the way with build planning?
Well, I feel like at first it seems like it's a huge investment of time. So just like with anything, you're reluctant if you know it's going to take a lot of time. But on the flip side, once you're dealing with the site, once all that planning is done, it's quick. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, the Bright Umbrella Craft site was 2 days. Yeah. Once the documentation was done, you took a look at it, said, okay, it looks makes sense. 2 days. That says it all, I think. How about you?
Same here. I think the hardest lesson I've learned is not planning in the first place because you lack a point of reference for your initial build, which adds time to the process. But you also lack a point of reference if you need to do new work in a system you haven't worked in months. That sort of idea that planning becomes documentation. Documentation, whether it starts as a planning document and evolves to something more else, it's critical not only to build but maintain.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I'm curious what you think after we've planned all this stuff. It still seems like early in a project, sometimes the client might approach you with a functionality change. Mm-hmm. How would you deal with that?
One of the things that the planning document becomes useful for is you can take a look at that and see where this new functionality might fit in, or maybe even leverage something you've already built. I think craft is a good example for this, you know, because the fields are not tied to a channel per se. They're abstracted from that. And so you may already have a field that could support that functionality change. That lets you give an estimate a little bit faster, a little more accurate even, and maybe makes it easier to actually build it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know where things are in the first place. Now I think about it, it's like, how did I ever estimate anything when a client asked me something new, when nothing was written down? Like, it's just like, guess it will take me this long. But like, if you have it written down where it's like, okay, here are all our channels and fields and whatever the heck, and you look at it, you're like, okay, that functionality can fit or not. I think that's even the more important thing is like, what you just asked will not be easy to implement based on the rest of the functionality that we've already written down.
What about if a client, it's a functionality that they had asked for in the beginning and it was part of your original discussions, but maybe it was overlooked in the planning process?
Right.
So what do you do that? Do you just swallow the time and cost since you promised it?
You know, I think with the documentation, like as we mentioned, it's a quick way to see whether a functionality can fit or not. I think most of the time, depending on what the request, if we promise something and we didn't plan for it, that was our error. So that's something that we just kind of do swallow and deal with. And that was our mm-hmm. error. However, I think a lot of that is dependent on how the scale of functionality mm-hmm. is. You know, sometimes we just have to have a difficult discussion with a client that explains we need more time and budget to make that functionality work.
Right.
And I think what helps with that conversation is establishing how much you've done your due diligence in previous correspondence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, half the time you're really trying to communicate and over-communicate with your client so they understand that you're trying to help mm-hmm. them, and we're all human here. Part of the reason why we have these planning documents is to mitigate these situations in the first place. But stuff happens. And if you've been a good communicator, you know, it allows them to understand you aren't trying to pull one mm-hmm. over them.
That actually brings up another scenario. So let's say we've planned for something that we were going to use a combination of maybe native and third-party solutions to achieve something, but as we're building it, it's not actually doing what we need. And so there's going to need to be some sort of custom development to complete the task. So is there anything that planning can do to help avoid this?
There's only so much you right. can do, right? Again, like you can just write down every type of conversation and notes and all that fun stuff and have a planning document. But I think that sometimes stuff happens. And even if you read further documentation with add-ons, there could be undocumented mm-hmm. issues. And that's not your fault. It just happens. So the way I think it should be handled is, again, just having a conversation like this before it even happens, like during even kickoff. Basically try to talk about, like, here are possible worst case scenarios. Mm-hmm. What can we do before it even happens? And it might not happen, but what would, you know, what are the next steps if it needs to happen? And sometimes, you know, especially when we're dealing with third party solutions and we don't have control because we didn't create that solution, you know, explain to the client there might need to be customization mm-hmm. if it doesn't work out of the box and there's circumstances out of our control, and that all we could do is try to communicate to them mm-hmm. immediately if anything comes up. And at the end of the day, this isn't really about add-ons. It's just basically trying our best to plan for any contingency and to communicate to them that there may need to be extra time or budget if that happens.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, sort of one final question. And it's so funny to be asking you these questions because I know the answers. I'm like interviewing you knowing the answers. But with this documentation that we use, whether it's for EE, Craft, or Statamic, is there one template that we use, or how do we maintain this documentation?
I think basically the last project tends to inform the next mm-hmm. project. So the last planning doc is the start of the new planning doc, because every project we find out something yep. new, we get better yep. at it, and there's something that we understand even further. And on top of that too, this is software, and software continues to be updated with new functionality. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, entry types didn't exist, and then it mm-hmm. did, you know? So I had to definitely change the approach to that for Craft. So you have to kind of consider it for the particular project, you know, not to make it into one long, always updating, but you always keep and make notes and in the back of your mind, okay, the next project, yeah. here's something we're going to add to the planning document.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a build it once and never look at it again, always use it. It's build it, use it, and then tweak it later for the next project, and then tweak it for the next project based on what you learn. So a planning document should be a living document, I think, is the bottom line, which I guess is another reason why we use Google Docs.
Yeah, for sure. So, so easy to comment and stuff like that mm-hmm. for these types of documents.
Yep.
Well, we really, I think, dove deep into our three favorite CMS solutions. And I hope all our listeners got a little bit of something today to figure out which one might be best for your particular client.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I hope they walk away from it really realizing what I mentioned already, that it's really your knowledge. You're just picking a tool that lets you apply that knowledge. So you have to pick the right tool, but if you have the knowledge, you can make all of these tools work for you.
Yeah. And, you know, again, caveat, this is our experience.
Right?
You know, this is admittedly, I think most people who are listening to the show know that Emily and I are expression engine experts, and Kraft and Statamic, they're great systems, but they're new, and we're still new to them too. So if there's anyone listening in the Kraft or Statamic community who are like, no, this is wrong, you guys have no idea what you're talking about, well, just let us know, actually. I would like to know what you think we could have explained a bit better. Just contact us at controlclickcast.com/contact. Let us know what you think we needed to highlight instead.
Yeah, maybe we can get you on the show to call us out.
Exactly. So, well, since it's just the two of us today, we decided that one of us will do our rapid fire 10 questions and Emily drew the short straw. So are you ready, Em?
Yep.
Okay. First question, macOS or Windows?
macOS.
What is your favorite mobile app?
Shazam.
Shazam? Yeah. What's Shazam?
Oh my God, it's the awesomest thing. So if you're in the car or a bar or anywhere and you hear a song, you're like, oh, I like that song. What is it? You turn Shazam on, it listens to it, it tells you what it is.
Whoa, wow.
It's integrated with a dozen different things. I use Evernote to track the music I want to buy, and so I just send it to Evernote. And then when I go buy my music, or you can add it to your Spotify list just from Shazam. It's really cool.
Oh, that's super cool.
Even like TV shows.
Nice.
Like music in a television show. I don't know how it does it. It's magic.
Compares sound bites, I guess.
It's awesome. I use it all the time.
All right, next question. What is your least favorite thing about social media?
I don't like any of it. I just don't. I mean, you and I have talked about this. I'm just not a fan of social media these days. I think it's the negativity, the self-indulgence, the hey, look at me kind of stuff. I'm a little tired of it.
Mm-hmm. So what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
I was thinking about this last night because I watched this documentary called I Know That Voice, and it's about voice actors.
Oh, I love that.
I would really love to do that because I think it'd be so cool. I'm not great at impressions, but I have a couple that I like to do, and they make me crack up, and I just think it'd be cool to be able to do that.
Confession. That is also something I would like to do. Oh my God, we're twinsies.
Every time we talk and find out more about each other, we discover we're like identical.
Okay, opposite question. What profession would you not like to do?
Probably something in the healthcare field dealing with like fluids.
Oh God, yeah. Okay. So who is the web professional you admire the most?
I have so many, but one that always stands out for me is Stephanie Sullivan Ruiz. She's one of those people that it's not just her technical ability, but she's a really open and transparent person. I know her as a friend, and so I also know some of the ways she deals with clients and deals with employers, and she's really great at standing up for herself without making other people feel bad.
So what music do you like to code to?
Everything. It's a mix of just about everything. I don't like country music. That I would never code to that, so it's more like what wouldn't I code to?
All right, what's your secret talent?
I can whistle obnoxiously loud.
Like a wolf whistle?
Like if you're at a concert and you hear those really loud whistles, that's usually me. And the person next to me is staring at me like, shut up. It's really loud.
What's the most recent book you've read?
I'm in the middle of reading Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
That sounds unique.
Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So it's by him.
Okay, cool. So lastly, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Aha. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Backup Pro and Pixel and Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode. We've rescheduled with Whitney Hess to talk about humanizing business. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.